Chris.
Welcome back to Talking Hoosier Baseball. This is a podcast by fans from the IUBase.com website for anyone wanting more information on Indiana University baseball. Today's Monday, April 15th, 2019. I am Chris Feeney, and today we're joined by Carl James, the baseball bracketologist, and Cassie Palmer, the stat guru for IUBase.com. Josh Bennett has the night off today. He's looking into a new fry recipe for our next tailgate. As far as a recap, it was a wild week, including two walk-offs and the Hoosiers winning all five games. The Hoosiers started the weekend with the lone one game of the season against rival Purdue because for some reason the Big Ten doesn't want to do the easy thing and give us a series against Purdue every year. So the rivalry night was a one-night deal, but we took it. It might not have started off as smooth as we wanted, but Tommy Summey took care of that, and it didn't go to the ending the way we wanted, but Cade Bunnell took care of that too. So then it was time to head over to Evansville, and it was the return of Drew Ashley to his hometown for the Friday night game at Broomfield. Now, he's returning to a place where he not only played but won sectional games. He actually threw a no-hitter on a Friday night sectional game there for Memorial for his high school. Friday night started well with Drew Ashley driving in the first run. Paulie Milto threw a great game. Justin Walker drove in a couple of runs as well. And we took a Friday night for the first time in three games. Then we head back to the BART. Second game, Tanner Gordon in the second game, allowing just one run on two hits with nine Ks in seven innings. The Hoosiers won that one. Then we go ahead to sweep the doubleheader with Andrew South Franks with his eight innings and 14 Ks. Then it was on to Sunday. We have the series in hand. It was in the bag. So we weren't sure how we were going to approach this game. There was a three-hour rain delay. It was wet. It was cold. We weren't sure exactly how it was going to go down. But let's have Kyle Schwarber describe how it went down.
For some reason, my audio clips are not working today, folks. Sorry.
That's why I didn't hear the music in the beginning, Carl. I believe that's why it was a late start. Problem, though. But if I can let people know, Kyle Schwarber likes sweeps, okay? And I believe that clip was after a Sunday loss to Michigan in 2014. And the big fellow was not happy that we didn't take all three. But our team did, okay? We didn't give up in the cold. We didn't give up in the wet. We didn't give up down 3-0 early. We didn't give up after we blew a lead in the ninth after some ground balls going the way we didn't want. What did we do? Huge defensive plays and Drew Ashley pulling it off. And it was ironic because just a few hours before, Tiger Woods had won the Masters in his Sunday red. And then what happens? The former Memorial Tiger, Drew Ashley, is making that same celebratory move at the BART as his team is running towards him. I mean, it came out of a movie script. You couldn't make it up. But it was a great day for Drew. It was a great day for the Hoosiers. A four-game sweep of a weekend set. So many Hoosier highlights. Mine, of course, my Hoosier highlight's going to be the consistency, the resiliency, the fighting back on that Sunday. That sweep was important, and we got it. What about you, Carl?
For me, I'm going to go with a really, really great defensive play on Friday night when Scotty Bradley took a scoop at first base. You hear about scoops at first base all the time. You hear about you watch the first baseman get their hand out in front of the bag and scoop a ball that's up in the dirt. The thing with Scotty's was that he was in foul territory behind with the runner running in front of him. And he manages to make this scoop. It was an absolutely phenomenal play. And a lot of what happened that was really good about this team this week was defensive. And that was a big part of that. Cass, what do you have?
Well, I'm going to go with, to me, the obvious one. And I'm going to say Cade Bunnell walking off Purdue. It doesn't get much better than that. To come in off the bench and be able to do that in a big rivalry game and a big atmosphere, I'm going to take a walk-off against Purdue any day of the week. So it is now time to give out the red belts. Chris, you had a lot of options this week. So who earned those belts?
All right. First off, I want to thank Cass and Josh for taking care of the belts while I was gone. But now they're back on my hands. So what I'm going to do for the Tony Butler defensive red belt, I know a lot of people were thinking it was Bradley. I thought it was Bradley. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to give the defensive red belt to Wyatt Cross. Okay? He caught three games in almost 24 hours at one point, the way it was going. He blocked balls all weekend long. He's catching foul tips. And then to top it off, to make that scoop in the ninth inning, I know a lot of people didn't see it because it was not on TV and the stadium certainly wasn't crowded. But when Drew got that ball and came home, the scoop he made, it was like a first baseman. And he made it with a catcher's glove. It was really wild. So Wyatt Cross is going to get the defensive red belt. Let's see, for the Joey Donato pitching red belt, again, so many choices. Talked about it in the recap. Our starting pitching was outstanding this weekend. But we also had a starter basically start a game that didn't know he was gonna against our biggest rival. He comes in with the bases loaded and nobody out and gets out of that. Then he throws six innings total, one hit, six Ks. Tommy Summer was great. And he's going to get the Joey Donato pitching red belt. As far as the offensive red belt, the Alex Dickerson award, again, this could have went so many ways. I mean, that doubleheader, we were getting hits up and down a lineup from freshmen to seniors. A lot of big hits on Friday. I mentioned the Justin Walker hit. But overall for the weekend, I'm going Drew Ashley. He had the most hits on the weekend series with eight. He had, listen, we hadn't scored on a Friday night in like, I don't know what it was, 20 innings or whatever the case. He gets a big two-out hit there. He was 4-for-9 in the doubleheader on Saturday, playing against his rival in front of a lot of friends and family on Friday. I'm sure there was some pressure there. And the storybook ending on Sunday to hit the walk-off. I guess it was a walk-off single, technically. I don't think he ever ran to second base. So the walk-off single was to wrap it up. So for the red belts this week, I'm going Drew Ashley for offensive, Wyatt Cross for defensive, Tommy Summer for pitching.
All right. Well, it's safe to say, Chris, that your picks inspired some discussions among the group. So I think Cass and I want a chance to chime in. Now, so far this season, we haven't done our honorable mentions. Last year, we called them cheese hats, but those went to Starkville along with the limo hats. So we have to come up with a new name. And again, I don't have a sound effect, so I'm just gonna the oven mitt. Okay.
Some of them use it. Some of them have these oven mitts. It's unbelievable. Yes. They're sliding to second base with these damn things on.
Okay. So to start us off, Cass, you have the first oven mitt.
Ooh. Now, should I do one for each or pick one?
You need an oven mitt? You can, whatever you want, Cass. It's all up to you.
Well, I'm going to give one just because it fascinated me. I'm going to give one to Cole Barr for being able to, I'm not finding the right, there it is. The first game against Evansville, he scored a run with no actual at-bats because he walked four times. He walked in every plate appearance. And I don't know that I've ever seen someone walk in every plate appearance before.
And I don't think I've seen these guys wear oven mitts until this year. So this is the perfect first oven mitt.
Yes.
Cass nails it.
So that one just absolutely fascinated me. And he also saw a bunch. He saw 22 pitches in four plate appearances. I loved it. That one I thought was really cool. And I've got to give one out to Andrew Salfrank for 14 strikeouts again. Like, if you can get 14 strikeouts in a game twice, that definitely deserves a shout out.
For me, my oven mitts, I'm going to give one to Matt Lloyd. He has now tied Cole Barr for 12 home runs, most runs, home runs. And he had a couple of great games. He had, I think, over 350 for the week as a whole. So really, really big offensive performance. And yeah, I know he struggled a bit on the mound, but you know what? He held on to that game on Sunday after the game was tied. It was still very, very dangerous a situation with the bases loaded and nobody out. And he did enough on the mound to let the defense be in a position to allow the team to continue playing that game on into the 10th where it was won. So I'm going to give mine to Matt Lloyd. And now you've got mail. You've got mail. You've got mail. You've got mail. You've got mail.
We're going old school tonight. I like it.
Oh, Cassidy's going to sing the song on the way out. Just
oh, God.
You don't want that. You really don't want that.
We got to have the song regardless. This is
okay. All right, Cassidy. Billy from Hoboken asks, is there way more errors? This is just getting too silly. Is there way more errors and unearned runs on Sundays and midweeks compared to Friday and Saturday?
So thanks for your question, Billy. I wasn't aware we had many fans in Hoboken, but here we go. So actually, midweeks are a bad error unearned run game across the board, but it's actually Saturdays, not Sundays, that are bigger as far as the weekend series. Fridays, the number of errors has gone down to less than one error every other Friday. Midweeks, however, at the other end are at more than two errors per game for those midweeks. But the real killer, those more than two errors, two and change errors per game, result in two unearned runs per game. So those are costly errors in the midweeks. Fridays, that 0.4 errors per game results in just 0.3 runs on average. And so those, they're really not affecting the game as much. They're errors that don't go on to score, don't score runs anyway. So I'm not as concerned with those. And even on Sunday, where there are still more than one error per game, it's not even scoring, allowing an extra run per game. So Sundays actually aren't too bad error-wise. Worse than Fridays, better than Saturdays and midweeks. But really, it's that midweek one that we have to watch for, which is kind of odd considering we're playing predominantly the same lineups those days. So just something to watch for. I haven't looked to see if maybe by chance most of the midweeks have been wet or cold or whatever, but that came to it. There's probably some random thing that I'm not accounting for as to why we've got so many errors in the midweeks. So Carl, Aaron asked the next question. How many games do the Hoosiers need to win down the stretch in your model to host a regional based on their RPI now being 23? Also, how many games need to be won to make the NCAA at all?
Excellent. Thank you for the question, Aaron. Right now, the Hoosiers have 8 home, 10 road, and 1 neutral. I'm going to start actually with Boyd's World, which provides a needs report, because it really comes up and calculates it in the form of wins. And I'll kind of adjust where I think my model is sitting at. For a 3 seed, we're looking at needing to go 9-10. For a 2 seed, that's 11-8. To host, we're looking at 17-2. And that's all based strictly on achieving a specific RPI target that we think is necessary to get those particular things. And obviously, there's gray areas when you get really, really close to any of those numbers. Also to say, though, a top 8 national seed, that is not achieved even running the table. My model is close to what Boyd's has, but is slightly more pessimistic. Again, this does not include the conference tournament, so this is all information to if the season ended right before the conference tournament. The conference tournament can have some impact, not huge, but can have some impact on those final things. So because I'm saying I'm more pessimistic, I'm saying in order to get into the tourney, I think the team can do that going 10-9 down the stretch. So the team has put itself into a pretty good position to get into the postseason.
But you're also saying we should stop booking some rooms. Like 17-2. I mean, 17-2 would be real difficult, I would think.
That's the way the model is currently predicted. That's going to be tough. Okay. It's not impossible.
True.
But I would say, you know what? 16-3 with a Big Ten title and running the table in the Big Ten tournament, maybe even 15-4 in doing that.
That could host.
But again, that means 19-4, you know, probably, or at least getting to the championship game, you know, and only losing the championship game in the Big Ten tournament. Okay. This team, I mean, getting a regional for a Midwest team, for a Big Ten team, is not easy. And you know, you got to win lots of baseball games. So you're going to, a team is going to have to really go on quite a run in order to get into themselves into a hosting situation. The RPI is actually a tad bit better right now because of today's game in which Illinois lost to Minnesota. So Indiana is now 22. And also, again, this is all based on what teams around this area are around this 15-20 in the RPI do. It's possible that in one season those numbers could be less, and who knows? And with a Big Ten title, maybe it's only a 20 RPI. A 20 RPI might be enough to get a host if the Hoosiers were to win a Big Ten title.
So 15-4 and a tournament title. That might be doable.
Well, a regular season title is a must. I think even running the table, if Nebraska runs the table, is not going to happen.
Got it.
If Indiana finishes behind Nebraska and wins 17 more games, not enough. Not going to cut it. They are going to take one team at most as a host from the Big Ten. And it's going to be the Big Ten champion. So I think it's almost an absolute requirement. You know, but we'll see. And as I said, things could shake out a little bit differently. All of this is kind of based on how teams generally finish. And usually for every team that does better than expected, there's a team that does worse. So these things all tend to flush out. But, you know, we've got another month. I will let you know that my real-time model, which I haven't published for this week yet, but it is, I did calculate it, has Indiana as a 2 seed now in at Arkansas, being the number 8 national seed, along with the 3 seed Oklahoma State and the 4 seed of Harvard. So back at you, Cassidy. Carl wants to know about trends in scoring by inning, both offensive and defensive.
Okay. So I actually, if I can get this pulled up, if my computer agrees with me. Okay, where did it go? I just had this.
Yeah, we're all having computer problems today.
Yes. Let me see if I do that. I put together a nice handy dandy visual watch on YouTube. There it is. Okay. So I looked at a per inning basis, and the Hoosiers are definitely scoring a lot more runs in the first 3 innings. They've actually scored 63 more runs than they've given up in the first 3 and 2 per game. They also score 43% runs in the first 3 innings. And the third inning alone, they score 17% of their runs. If things were equal, you would expect about 11% per inning ballpark. That would put you at 99% of your runs. We have the little fluke in there of we've had some extra innings games, but you would expect about 11%. So that 17 is pretty high. That offense then trails off in the 7th through 9th innings. Hoosiers have actually given up 13 more runs than they've scored in those innings. And the 9th inning is particularly bad, where the Hoosiers have given up 18 more runs than they've scored. scored. Only 3% of the Hoosiers' offense has come in that ninth inning. And to make matters a little more difficult for winning close games down the stretch, pitchers are giving up a lot of runs in the eighth and ninth. And actually 31% of the runs that they've given up have come in those eighth and ninth innings. Now, some of that there could be a little bit of, hey, we are up by 15 runs. Let's put some new, a little untested pitcher out there, see what happens. So there is going to be a little bit of that, but in general, that 31% is quite a lot for the eighth and ninth inning. And that's where some of those, like that Coastal Carolina game, you're going to have some of those tight games that go the wrong way because of those late innings runs. But yeah, I do remember the Evansville guys talking about that run differential, and it definitely does exist. Maybe not quite as much as they were exaggerating it, but there is a run difference there. So Chris has been keeping an eye on future Hoosiers. Chris, what's been happening in the high school ranks?
All right. Thanks, Cass. Yeah, there was a real big showcase at Grand Park in Indianapolis just this past weekend. And we had Columbus North invited and we had Edgewood invited. So we had some future Hoosiers participating there. We had a couple guys from the Facebook group actually been able to go to it and watch some of them. And from what I understand, Casper Clark, who is a junior on Columbus North, pitched a great game. Now, I was able to see him over at the BART for the Canes Midwest Prospect Showcase. He's a big boy, let me tell you. I went and looked it up. He's 6'6", 250 on the mound. He's actually the number three class for the juniors in Indiana for pitching, and he pitched great. Sounds like he was throwing 87, 88. He was throwing this heavy, heavy ball, from what I understand. Like, they were calling it a cement mix. Like, people just kept hitting it into the ground. So Casper Clark is definitely a guy to look out to, and he's really, really high on Indiana's list, and he's starting to get in some national lists too. So definitely looking forward to that out of Columbus North. Now for Edgewood, we had a sophomore actually throw a great game. That's Luke Hayden. Now, he is a 6-foot guy, 190, much different than Casper Clark, but he threw a 8-inning game. Yeah, they went extras, but he still had, you know, he pitched the whole thing. Only gave up 3 hits in a run. He had 9 Ks. This was a wild game, too. From what it sounds like, another recruit of ours, Ethan Vacrumba, threw out a runner with one out in the last inning when they ended up winning. So we had some real good performances from high school guys. Zach Bierman threw a great game last week. 6 innings, he had like 13 Ks. There was a lot of talent coming up that's going to be our way soon. And a lot of it is Indiana-based. So we're going to start looking at more of that on the pod as weeks go by, especially looking at the local guys. Maybe you want to go check them out. You know, we got Columbus North. We have some players in the region. We have Edgewood, like I mentioned. And, you know, North Central is Zach Bierman. So there's plenty of guys you could check out before they get here, whether they're sophomores, juniors, or seniors. Cass, what do you got for us for stats for the week?
So I'm going to start off with something a little more fun that came up on Greg Murray's radio broadcast. He was talking about throwovers. So when a Hoosier is on base, pitcher throws over to try to catch them, keep them around the base, whatever. And Greg was talking about how it seems like Eli Dunham gets thrown over against more than anybody else on the team. Well, when I can, I actually do track those. It's kind of hard for the couple of early season games where there was no audio, no video, and no MLB stats. So I am missing a few games. That's the way this one works. But Greg was not completely wrong in saying Eli's been thrown over against a lot. When you go just by straight number, the leader there is Drew Ashley. He's been thrown over against, by my count, 33 times, which works out to almost one throwover per game. But they tend to come in bunches. But Eli is actually higher at a per game rate of 1.2 per game because he missed a decent chunk of the early season. So lately, yes, it is definitely true that Eli has been thrown over against a lot. Opposing pitchers are pretty worried about Drew, Eli, and Gorski in particular. I also took a quick peek at starting lineups and seeing how many different lineups the Hoosiers have used. On offense for the batting order, the Hoosiers have used 27 different lineups, with the most common, the most frequently used, coming recently in the last week and a half, with the batting order of Ashley, Gorski, Lloyd, Dunham, Barr, Bradley, Richardson, Walker, and Cross. That's been pretty common the last 2 weeks. And then on the defensive alignment, there have been 20 different defensive alignments so far this season, with the most common being the one that was actually used exclusively this past week, Purdue through Evansville, of Cross catching, Bradley at first, Ashley at second, Barr at third, Walker at short, Dunham in left, Gorski in center, and Richardson in right. Now, some of this consistency lately could be due to the injury situation. You don't have Ryan in there. You don't have Kalitha in there. You don't have quite as many of your normal starters competing for these spots. It's also pretty common for things to settle down as the season goes on. Early on, the teams are experimenting, seeing who's going to be playing where, who's going to be starting, things like that. You get a lot more variety early on. As the season goes on, it definitely calms down and you get a more regular lineup. Although, again, you expect multiple catchers and things like that. So it'll get a little less consistent than it's been the last week and a half, but not by too much. So, Carl, while the Hoosiers were out of the conference this weekend, the rest of the Big Ten was in action. How did that weekend shake out?
Well, as has been much the case, there's always a little bit, at least, of what's up seems to be down. And the most surprising series of the weekend, in my opinion, was Michigan dropping a series to Ohio State, who had just before the week before got swept at home by Northwestern. So that was a pretty stinging loss for the Wolverines. As they continue to have some struggles throughout the Big Ten. I mean, they're 5-3, which isn't awful, but for as much as that team continues to be touted by the national media, they've put up 24 wins, but now so has Indiana put up 24 wins. It's just it doesn't seem to be shaking out as much. Illinois. Finally did something in the league. They took a 2-1 series in Minneapolis from Minnesota. I think Indiana fans should be happy about that result because that brings Illinois only up to 3-6. So they're still way behind in the Big Ten. And the most they can win is 18 games. And I don't know that that's going to be enough, that 18 wins, even if they were to win out, I don't know that that's enough to win the league. And by at least dealing one loss to Minnesota, that gives Indiana a 1.5 game lead on the Gophers, who have been up and down. They really struggled early, came out of the gate strong in the Big Ten series in season, and have stumbled a little bit in recent. It's Nebraska that keeps rolling, and Nebraska did last weekend what the Hoosiers could not. They swept Penn State. They won all three games, including the Friday game. And now what's interesting is Nebraska is now a game and a half up on Indiana, having won 10 games in the league. Nebraska and Indiana both play teams next week that the other one has swept. So it's another, you know, competition there. Nebraska's already swept Michigan State. Indiana has already swept Iowa. So Hoosier fans are really going to be rooting for the Hawkeyes to do some damage to Nebraska, and for the Hoosiers, obviously, to go up and like Kyle Schwarber said, even if we didn't hear him,
allegedly, Carl.
Yes, he allegedly said, you know, 2 years ago, series wins were great. Now we want sweeps. We want sweeps. So that's the hope. If the idea and the goal, you know, is to win a Big Ten title, and I, and from seeing what the team did this weekend, I think they're capable of a Big Ten title. So that's where I see the Big Ten race. I think it really, I really do now think Nebraska is the team to beat in the league. So Chris, what does the new week have in store for the Hoosiers?
All right. Thanks, Carl. And I believe you. I remember when Kyle said that. I was in town. That was my first year in town. what we have for this week, we're going to have tomorrow night, Tuesday night, Ball State at the BART. It's Wear Pink Night, and it's Kids Eat Free Night. A lot of people are sleeping on that. That's a good thing. You have a child there under, I believe it's 18. You get a voucher for some food and drink, and it's free. It's good stuff. And after tomorrow night, there's only 7 games left at the BART. And that's, you know, weather permitting, so you never know. So get out there if you can. It's supposed to be like 75 degrees tomorrow, from what I understand. You know, and we've had some good history against Ball State. We've actually beat them 10 times in a row, which I'm not that thrilled about, because at some point, you know, it averages out. The last time they actually beat us, we had Kyle Schwarber and Sam Travis and Dustin DeMuth. Schwarber didn't play in the game. It was a midweek. But, you know, Travis and DeMuth and Donnelly, and they beat us then, and then we beat them 10 times in a row. And if you go back before that, there was like 6 more games that we won. The last time they beat us before that, we had Dickerson and Fegley in 2009. So they could beat those teams, but we've been killing them 10 in a row now. So we'll see. I hope it continues. Let's see. For Ball State, they are 21-11, and they're 5-8 on the road. Their big hitters are going to be Aaron Simpson. He's batting .381, 69 total bases, 32 RBIs, so look for him. We have Ross Messina. He's hitting .323 with 74 total bases and 4 home runs. Another guy to look out for. Another thing going on with Ball State, they're undefeated against teams from Indiana. So they've been running the table here. Valpo, they beat Notre Dame twice. They beat Butler. They've already beat Purdue. They beat IPFW, which I think is called something else now. But either way, they beat the Mastodons. They beat them. And they have 2 with us. Remember, we're playing this week, Tuesday. Then we're going to go to Victory Field and play them again. So we're probably not going to do another preview for them. So what I'm going to do now is mention what's happening in Victory Field. There's 2 big events for alumni. I want to make sure people know about them. It's the IUAA Central Indiana chapter. And if you go to myiu.org and you go to the events calendar, you can sign up for this. There is a 5:30 food and beverages free if you sign up for this. The cost of the pregame picnic is $20. That includes a game ticket. And it's all you can eat, all you can drink, non-alcoholic, before the game starts. Zach Sanford is in charge of that chapter, and you can contact him. I'm going to post this on the site, but I want to let people know. There is also an I Association Night event at Victory Field against Ball State. Now, you have to be part of that group to participate in this. I think this is anyone who's ever won a letter as an athlete for IU, if I believe so. So I'm going to put all that on the website if this is something you want to do. I know we're going to be there, a bunch of us, a bunch of friends at the site are going to be there. Hoosiers are going to be in the first base dugout in Victory Field. So we didn't want to save all this information for next week, because you would have only had 1 day notice. So just to get on back with the preview for this week, after Ball State, we're going to go to East Lansing, Michigan. They're 8-25, and they are 0-8 in the Big Ten. Again, I don't like the fact that they are 0 anything, because now we need the streak to continue. We want to make them 0-11. They recently got swept in New Jersey by Rutgers. Rutgers is very good at voting, by the way, you know, for third assistance. So Rutgers in all caps, please. Let's see. Michigan State is 3-3 otherwise at home. Something to factor in here, even though Michigan State might be having the best season, Mason Erla is their Friday night guy. He's the guy who shut us down in the Big Ten tournament last year in that game for 6 innings. We didn't score a run. I barely had any base runners. Obviously, we came back later. Gorski hit the miracle bomb with 2 outs in the 9th. But he pitched real good against us. And I know it's not Miller and it's not Sowers, but and it's not Kalaitha. They'll be out, but we got Barr and Dunham and Richardson replacing them. So it's a lot of different bats in there, but this guy can throw. Friday night's going to be a contest. Saturday and Sunday are a little different. The Saturday guy, Tarinski, is 0-6 with a 6 ERA. Sunday, there's been like five different guys, so it was really hard to figure out who they're going to throw. Something to bring up, which probably has a lot to do with what happened last year in that game, their closer is different this year. They brought in a JUCO guy in Dingo Diaz. He's a hard thrower. It looks like he's been doing pretty well. So they have a new closer. Hopefully we don't see him, obviously, unless they're going to bring him in for some kind of, I don't know, because he hasn't thrown. But we definitely don't want to be in a situation to have to come back on these guys' closer. We want to sweep this thing out and take care of it. This will be the first time in like 100 years or something that the Hoosiers have played a night game in Michigan State, because they just recently got lights. Indiana State played the first night game there last week, and Michigan State beat them. And this Mason Erla shut them down. They had like two hits and no runs. And this is the Indiana State team that we had that shootout with, right, in the midweek. So this guy can throw Friday night. You know, record aside, Friday's going to be a challenge, I got a feeling. They spent $1.5 million on these lights. 135 years they didn't have it. And they're 1-0. And they're making a real big deal about, you know, Friday night lights. I would think the crowd will be into it. Friday at least should be a good environment. Let's take care of business on that one. Let's see. For the series, it's a 6:35. Oh, boy. I don't have it right in front of me here. Let's see. 6:35 Friday night. A 4 p.m. on Saturday. We don't really play a lot of 4 p.m. Saturday games, so keep that in mind. And a 1 o'clock on Sunday. I'm assuming we're going to have radio for everything. I'm assuming it's BTM Plus for everything. I haven't been able to confirm that yet, though. So that's going to be it for the series preview. Now, usually we kick it over to whoever hosts the show for final thoughts, but that's me, so I'll kick it over to me. And what I wanted to bring up, and I did not want to let go by before we wrap up tonight, is that it's Jackie Robinson Day. If you put on a ball game today, you're going to see everybody wearing those 42s. And what he did and the struggles that he had to go through to let anybody play baseball, you know what I'm saying, regardless of breaking a color barrier like he did. And it's something to bring up, and it's very important what he did. Look into him. Look into Jackie Robinson if you're not familiar with what the story is. He's a Brooklyn Dodger. He was the first player to break the color barrier. And if you're ever in New York, not to promote the Mets, but if you're ever in New York and you get to Citi Field, go to the Rotunda. It's the Jackie Robinson Rotunda. They have videos. They have lots of clips where you can learn more about him and the struggles and what he had to go through. So if you're throwing a ball game tonight and you see all the 42s, you're going to see guys with special commemorative cleats and stuff. I know Robinson Cano was wearing a pair. They were pretty sharp. He put them out on Twitter. They were real nice. So we definitely wanted to mention that today before we wrap up. So that's going to do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. We apologize for the audio issues. Listen, you never know. Things happen. Believe me, Kyle Schwarber wants sweeps. You can read up on Indiana Baseball at iubase.com. You can follow us on Twitter at CU at the Bart and at iubase17. You can leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. For Carl James, Cassidy Palmer, I'm Chris Feeney, and we'll see you at the Bart tomorrow night.